Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with leading experts on the sport, Hall of Fame sportscaster Linda Cohen and national NHL reporter Emily Kaplan, is every Monday and Thursday. Cohen and Kaplan will bring fans their insider perspectives, reporting, reactions, and analysis to the latest breaking headlines and under-the-radar stories, both on and off the ice. The two will also be joined regularly by ESPN's lineup of NHL voices, current NHL stars, and legends of the game. That's the In the Crease podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cyndi Lauper, and more. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream on ESPN Plus in the ESPN app immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
I'm invigorated. I'm motivated. I saw a speaker at this event I was in New York, and I wasn't expecting much. I got to be honest. I was like, I've heard this guy speak a lot. I know what he's going to say. I talk to him in private moments. I talk to him on podcasts, and I listen to his podcast. But lo and behold, man has some fresh gems for you. So did you come in planning those gems, or they just kind of materialize in the moment?
First of all, shout out to you for all this energy, because my morning has not been the greatest. The Foxworth is like, nah, I'm about
to be the teammate,
I'm about to make, about to make
gonna...
these boats rise, baby. Like, that came in. Well done. I did a little thing at the Soho House earlier this week, and Dominique was kind enough to come check it out. And it was actually interesting, because it was kind of one of those, I felt like one of those, you know, how'd you get here sort of things. And I have given that talk a zillion times in the last 10, 12 years at this point. But man, Ken Gibbs, who puts it together, I've literally worked with him for 21 years. Like, we go back to the, like, it's wild for me to look up and be like, wow, I've been doing all these things for like 20 years. So I just got up there and was like, okay, we can talk about this a little bit. And so, you know, talked a little bit about the journey. I didn't think I was going to be hitting them with some gems, but apparently people thought that there were a couple of gems.
There were. So those type of events, you and I laugh a little bit about how we're learning how to be friends late in life, like learning how to be good friends to people late in life. And so, like, when you sent me that invite, I was like, I don't know if he's inviting me or not. You just kind of sent me, let me know what's happening. And I was like, all right. So then you invited me, and I was like, I mean, I don't really care what Bomani got to say, frankly, but this is what friends do. Friends go and show up for friends, you know, like I'm gonna go show up and be there for my man because he invited me. And I went there, and I actually took something from it. You talking about how it was a kind of counterintuitive way of telling people to be confident in themselves. I didn't need it. I don't have a problem with being confident in myself, but it's nice to be reminded. But you went and told people that their opinion don't matter. That's why they need to give it a shot. That's called a great headline, because that makes people want to read the article, right?
Yeah. Now, first of all, it's actually interesting that you said that, because one, I'm like, I know, you know, you come up to the city early in the week to do the TV stuff, figured you might have been looking for something to do. So I was like, yo, FYI, send it. And to me, that is like implicitly an invitation. But I realized, no, that is not necessarily saying that. My bad.
Both of us are trying to figure out how to be friends.
My thought on that was like, hey, you know, if you want to do it, cool. If not, I certainly wouldn't have been offended. But, you know, that's how it goes. And part of it for me, honestly, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't talking to an empty room, right? Like, that would be, I've been to things at that place where you get in there and it's an empty room, where I'd be in the elevator and I'm like, oh, wow, I would have gone to that event if I was aware it was happening, you know? So I was like, you know, I had a couple homies come out and it was greatly appreciated. But this is what I was talking to people about is, can't remember how it came up, but I think someone was asking the question of like, what do you do when you don't think that you can do something, right? Like, you just feel like, I'm not sure if that is something that I can do. And my point was, you only have one vote, right? And so it's kind of two things about it. Number one is, I'm someone who has been asked/invited to do things that I did not think that I was qualified to do, right? Like, even my whole, my whole career was waking up one day and being like, all right, I think I can write. I'm going to do it, right? And then getting in there to do it. But I had no way to convince anybody that I could. Then people ask you to do stuff. You're like, hey, I don't know if I can do that. But you know what? My job is not figuring out if people can do stuff. My job is just to do it. If I don't do it well, that's on you. I ain't asked to do this. You asked me to do this, all right? Or you agreed or whatever. But whatever it comes down to, there's a possibility that I might not think I'm capable of it, but you do. And I got to be humble enough to admit that you might be right, right? I have to be humble enough to be like, you know what? My opinion on this, I just got one vote. And so a lot of times people are just like, yo, this thing comes up and it's like, yo, I don't know if I can do this or I don't think I can do this. You might be wrong. All right, just entertain the possibility for a brief moment that maybe, just maybe, you might be wrong because you only got one vote. Like, you might think that what you do is the greatest thing in the world. Nobody else agrees with you. You only have one vote, right? Your, I don't know if I can do it. Right. Yep, you only got one vote. And your vote, honestly, in most cases, externally, has the least weight of anyone's. Now, internally, it absolutely has a lot there. But the thing is, if you can't do something, it's really not the worst thing in the world, right? Like, if this one thing comes up and it turns out that you can't do it, it's really not the worst thing in the world. So yeah, that was exactly what it is. Your opinion of how good you are, honestly, doesn't matter. It really doesn't. The streets gonna tell you.
Yeah, so go ahead and try. Don't decide you can't do it before you can. It don't matter what you think. Just go ahead and give it a shot. You'll find out.
Yeah, shit. I say, you'll find out one way or another. Streets gonna let you know.
Yeah.
Like, early in the Twitter game, I bet people have already forgotten about this. This dude had come up with an account called Shit My Dad Says, and it was, the idea was basically this guy was relaying the stuff that his older father says around the house. He even, like, sold a sitcom off of it that I don't think ever saw the light of day. But I remember that account had one line that was like, yo, don't tell a woman why she shouldn't deal with you. Let her figure it out for herself.
Yeah, it's good advice.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. Like, you ain't got to confess it. People will come up with it. They'll draw their conclusions. Like, for me, for example, I would definitely not call it crises of confidence. But my confidence in myself as a writer is not as solid as my confidence in myself as, like, doing television or doing a podcast or something like that. It's just not there in that way, right? And so Ta-Nehisi Coates asked me to write something for Vanity Fair for an issue that he guest edited last summer. So that dude, that magazine, all right? I'm a dude that got fired from writing from ESPN.com, all right? Do I think I am capable or qualified to do this? I guess we're gonna find out. I don't know. Like, could I tell you definitively going in there, yeah, I'm good enough to write for Vanity Fair? No, I could not have. If I had died never writing something for Vanity Fair, I could have been like, yeah, I mean, I'm a good writer, but I'm not a writer on that level. And I would have been just fine. But nope, my man says try it. All right, cool. I'm gonna give it a run. Like, my homeboy once said to somebody, walked up to him about acting. He lives in L.A., and somebody came up to him and was like, yo, have you ever done any acting? And I'll never forget what he said. He said, there was a time in my life where I would have responded to that by saying, nah, I've never done anything like that. He said, but that day my response was, why do you ask? He's like, I'm about to disqualify myself from this.
Yeah. So the you and I are in a group text with Coates, mm-hmm. and this will tell the listeners a little something about me. When I found out that you were writing in Vanity Fair and Coates was like the guest editor, I was like, damn, congratulations, Bomani. Why ain't you ask me? Because, like, I say this a lot, is one of the cool things about having kids is they're so young, they haven't learned to, like, try to fit in all the time, and they're so honest, and we all think of ourselves as kind of within the same personality range as the people around us, you know what I mean? Because all of us try to act close to the middle,
right.
You know? Whereas kids are like, if they're scared, they're like, I'm scared. Right. Of a flip-flop or something like that. A two-year-old kid, they're like, no, that flip-flop is scary. If you walk in and the flip-flop make you uncomfortable, you're gonna act the whole time like it ain't a problem. Yeah, you know, you pull it off convincingly enough. So I say that to say that I forget, when I was hearing you talk like that, I forget that I used to say this just as a joke, that if it wasn't for my arrogance, I would be perfect. Because like part of the problem with me is like, I don't ever think I can't do anything, which sets me up for some pretty big failures sometimes, but it also sets me up for like unlikely successes. So when I hear you talking to those people and I see people nodding and smiling like, wow, maybe I can do this. I have the other problem where I need to tell myself sometimes like, nah, you can't. I remember when I was, in high school. No, I was probably younger than that. I'm in Pop Warner playing football. And this is the way that I've kind of approached a lot of things in life is we're doing some really aggressive conditioning and everybody's getting tired, people falling down and whatever. And I look around and I'm like, well, if he can do it, I can do it.
Yes.
I'm 12 years old. But I look over and say, this is still running. I'm still running. Mm-hmm. And that's the same way that I look around is like when I decided to like start writing. I looked around and was like, there's a lot of people out here writing.
Oh, yeah.
If they could do it, I can
Oh, yeah. No. I do have a lot of that. I absolutely do.
Oh, yeah, I know you do. I've talked to you enough to know that you have the confidence and bravado of a 90s rapper just like me.
Yeah, I'm looking around like, oh, okay, if this cat could get this. Like, honestly, the thing about flunking out of grad school to me that was really the most difficult was looking at some people that made it out to the other side. And I'm like, oh, man. Even he know he ain't me, but you know what? It didn't matter, right? Like, like in the grand scheme, that part didn't matter. And I like ultimately made peace with that. But I talked about this in the talk where I was like, the way I started writing was I read this book by an author that's pretty famous, like seen as an authority. And I read his book and I was like, oh, if he's an authority, I got this. Like, don't, and not even on some old, like, I'm gonna throw it in your face type stuff. It was just like, oh no, I feel like I can do that, right? And then I got in and I did get humbled, like, just a little bit. Like, there aren't that many things that I look at and be like, yo, I can't do that. But like with Vanity Fair, I think I don't know if I've talked about this publicly, but my concern there was, I know I can write well, but I need to write up to the standard of the publication, right? Like, I did not want to file something to them. And then when I read it, it looked like somebody else wrote it because they had to do so much to bring it to the place that was necessary for publication. Like, that's the thing that I didn't want. And of course, I did not want to embarrass the person who was like, yeah, I think that you can do this. I'm like, dog, have you even read that much of my stuff? Like, are you like, really? Like, all right, we here now.
As I get older and more confident, I'm more comfortable with letting people in on like insecurities. I don't mean like saying how confident I am is not to say that I've never had any crisis of confidence or insecurity. Mm-hmm. Trust me, Saturday night before we about to play Randy Moss and we don't have no double coverages in the game plan, I was nervous. Trust me, out there lined up, pressed up against him, you think I wasn't concerned? Of course. Playoff games, of course. I'm saying I was nervous is still kind of like sugarcoating it. Like, I was concerned. Like, can I do this in certain moments? And like, that happened in other aspects of my life too. I certainly understand that and get that. But I think when it comes to like, and this is something that I'm learning now with the mental things where I challenge myself more mentally since I'm out of the physical thing, is there is very little difference between like my computational ability and that of people who I think are like really, really smart. Mm-hmm. But what I never realized until, again, when you have kids and you talk to their teachers and you talk to different specialists to try to make sure they have all the opportunities they can, you learn that there is the skill between having a complex thought and communicating a complex thought is they're two separate skills. So like in my mind, lots of things make sense. They're ingenious and smart and connect a bunch of different disciplines. And then the challenging part, at least for me in writing, and I've gotten better at this with practice, and it's not just writing, it's even with speaking. And I think this is something that you have that has always impressed me, is when I'm doing a show, if I prepare for it only in my head, it doesn't always come out clean. Mm-hmm. And I have like a really good thought. I did the Ringer NFL podcast last week. People went bananas for it. They asked me what I wanted to promote, and I said the right time because I had nothing else to promote. But anyway, lots of people in the football world went bananas for it because some of the thoughts was the way to communicate something that they had already understood, but they didn't know how to communicate it. And that's because like 30 minutes before, I sat down and actually physically wrote notes. These are thoughts that I've had, and I've written articles about these thoughts 2, 3, 4 years ago, all of them. But they weren't new. It was just I had found a way to be able to communicate this. And this is, like I mentioned, something that I've always been impressed with you. It's not that how smart you are. You're very smart, obviously. But it's your ability to clearly and coherently communicate complex thoughts on the fly. Like, I'll drop something on your lap. And that's why I asked, had you prepared at all for the talk that you gave? Because sometimes the heat and the pressure and the intensity of a moment, it happens to me sometimes when I'm on Get Up in the morning, where like I'm preparing at 6 o'clock to do an 8 o'clock show, and I can't quite come up with a good analogy or a good explanation for what's happening. Then we get on, they turn on the lights, and something gets sparked in that moment. So just, I don't know, it's a bit rambly, which is to the point of having complex thought and not being able to properly communicate it. But the point is, those are separate skills, and one of them you can work on. I think like your computational ability, you can't do nothing about that. You got the hard drive you got.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is, like, you put me on TV, you put me on a microphone, I got no nerves whatsoever. You know, like, you get me in any of those spaces, they don't do it to me. Even that room that probably had about 30 people in it, give or take, if it was that many, I'm better about that now. But, like, being in a room with people is different, man. Like, people telling me how clear I was, man, I was getting halfway through my thoughts being like, damn, I don't even remember what the question was. All right, I'm going to just keep going. And, you know, like I was doing that, like, on an essay question where you didn't really study for the test. And you ain't answering the question. You answering what you know, right? You know, and then you decide, okay, cool, you go run that out. But, no, when you look, man, ain't nothing quite like telling a joke and don't nobody laugh, right? Like, that rest in peace, DMX. I told a joke and them girls didn't laugh. You just be looking at them like, hoo-hoo! You know what I mean? Like, that ain't a good feeling, man. I don't really enjoy that. I'd be like, oh, man, what am I going to do now? Ain't nothing going to throw me off. Quite like that sort of thing is going to do it. But it's wild now for me, like, when I do these sorts of things, because I kind of stopped doing the tell us about your background talk just because I've been doing it for so long and I felt like most of the people knew what it was. And there was a point where, like, a defining characteristic of my journey, if, you know, journey, I don't mean to sound so self-indulgent, but was...
Indulge.
Yeah, but it was the getting knocked down, right? Like, it's like, okay, it's flunk out of grad school, okay. ESPN don't renew your contract, okay. Radio station gets sold, okay. Radio station gets shut down, okay. Like, it was all this, but I kept going. And then we had a nice long 6-7 year run of sevens. That didn't become the tale anymore. Like, that wasn't it. And then, you know, did a TV show, got canceled, right? I guess I've come a long way because I don't view that at all like I viewed the things that had happened in the past or whatever it was. Like, I got a different understanding of the business of things and how it goes or whatever. But that was just kind of like, oh, okay, this is one of those things that happens. And part of it for me, and I don't know how this applies to a lot of other people because they're operating in different spaces, but I realized that part of what was quote unquote failure in this was also a byproduct of ambition. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so let's say that you're trying to get to the NFL and you are one of the last cuts in training camp. And by the way, every single person that I have ever met who went to an NFL training camp but did not make the team was one of the last cuts. Not a single person was the cut at the 90-man roster. Every single one of them was the hardest decision that anybody ever had to make, right? But if you are a cut on an NFL roster, yo, man, you got really far in this. Like, there's no way that I could view that or look at it as, like, some sort of failure. Like, I have people where I say something about something online, and they'll try to respond and be like, yo, so what happened to High Noon? High Noon got canceled after they put it on TV, right? Yeah, you know exactly. What I mean? Like getting to TV is a big deal. And I think that a lot of us don't appreciate, even in the moments of failure, what you did right along the way to get to that point of quote-unquote failure. Like, my brother tells this story once. Basically, this is 1995, I want to say 96 somewhere, and Prince was on tour. And so the Prince ticket was Prince concert was sold out, so he and his man had a plan, and they went up to the venue on the day of the show to ask about tickets. It had one guy's job was to ask a bunch of questions, and my brother's job was to get a look at what the pass was, like what the lanyard was around somebody's neck. Went back, it was some object, early days of Google, went. Found it, printed it out, made the passes, right? So they got the passes to the press show. And so they get to the first door, boop, flash the pass, go through. And I forget where they were. And then they're like, yo, let's see if we can go down a level. Boop, flash the pass, made it work. And I go, trying to go down to the floor, boop, flash the pass, got through. Got down to the front row. Now it's like, yo, see if we can get backstage. Get to the backstage, man. Bang! Nope. And now we have a problem. And now you got to lie to stay out of jail and everything else. Now, the story is not that you got thrown out of the Prince concert. The story is you got to the front row.
Exactly.
And that's what a lot of this stuff is. You got to the front row.
The analogy that came to my mind was like English soccer. It's like, once you got a show on TV, you're like trying to win the premiership. You're not fighting to not get relegated.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, our record was good enough that we were in the last week of games, we were close to winning the premiership. We got a draw. Our final result was a draw, and we did not. Oh, well.
Yep.
We still caked up, and we still coming back next year. You know, like, that's my thought. Whereas it's different when you're trying to work your way up to get in. Those losses hurt a lot more. This ties together with another thought a little bit that I was thinking is we all have been conditioned. Maybe we've been conditioned, or maybe it's natural that we like view everything like a movie. Like our own life is we're the protagonist of this movie or this book. And we've been trained to think of it in that way. And we retell these stories. And I know you do it too. I've done it plenty of times. We retell these stories focusing on specific events as if those were the only events. Those specific events are often like when you overcame something or when somebody doubted you. We had this laugh before. It's like your eighth grade teacher said you wasn't going to be nothing because out of 100 kids that acted like that, 99 of them wasn't nothing. So like she was playing the odds. So like I'm guilty of this too, where I can go back through my life and all the successes I've had, I can retell the story. And the story is all about my perseverance, my toughness, my greatness, my resilience, my intellect. But I can also go back and retell the story and it can all be about luck.
Mm-hmm.
Like I made a decision when I was 17 to reject it. I narrowed it down to Maryland, Michigan, and Purdue, the places that I wanted to go. I narrowed it down to there and I made a decision to go to Maryland because they were terrible the year before. They were like 5-6. And I was like, I'm going to start on day one here. Those other places, I can't start. Drew Brees was at Purdue, so they were good. They wanted me to play receiver. And Michigan was Michigan. They had just had a coaching change, but they're still Michigan. I knew they had 5 stars. So I was like, Maryland don't got no 5 stars. I'm going to start right away. That was the decision I made. We went there, and we were great. I did not start right away. I didn't start till the last 2 games of the year because one of our corners got cooked at Florida State. So that's the way I could tell that story is I got lucky that we only lost 1 game. I wasn't the reason that we only lost 1 game. We played well. And I got lucky that my first start was an 8 p.m. Thursday night primetime only game on TV against Clemson. We beat Clemson. We win the ACC. The week before we lost to Florida State, the cornerback who started earlier had like some mental health issues, disappeared from the team. They moved to safety to corner for the Florida State game. He got cooked. I've been redshirted the whole year. They was like, All right, we're burning your redshirt.
There was the break glass.
Yeah. We're burning your red shirt with 2 games left to go in the season in a primetime game against Clemson. I went out there. If I watch that film now, it is an embarrassment. But I balled. I was scared. So every snap, they snapped the ball, and I just got deep. And, of course, Clemson was like, hey, true freshman, having his first start, we're going at him. What are we going to try to beat him with? We're not going to beat him with no hitches or slants. We're going to beat him with goes. Just so happened, they threw like 3 goes. I was deep as hell because I was scared to give it. If they had ran a comeback, a dig, a slant, or whatever, anything else, they would have destroyed me. So they threw those. I broke up like 3 of them. They sent me on a cornerback blitz, and I got a sack in the red zone one time. Then I'm the player of the game in that moment. The following week, we go to NC State. NC State, watch the film. They ran 5-yard hitches the whole game. We ended up winning out of luck, but I was getting torn up 5 yards at a time. But it didn't matter because that big game, they threw oranges on the field when we won that game. The fans, the students came down and tore down the goalposts. They burnt down the whole campus. And so going into the next year, I'm preseason all ACC. We go to Florida game. The guy who was having mental health stuff came back, so I didn't start that game. We got blown out in the first half, so I played the whole second half, and nobody cared that I couldn't do nothing with Jabbar Gaffney. But then I go in, and it's like, all right, I'm the best young corner in the conference. Then that sophomore year, I had 6 picks. And so it was like, oh, he actually is good, you know? So, like, that, I could tell that story where it's luck. Then I could say, like, I got paid in Baltimore because I got traded. That's frankly the only reason why I got paid. I got traded to Atlanta, who everybody thought they were going to suck because the coach just left. The quarterback was in jail. They had a rookie, Matt Ryan, who no one had much faith in starting. It's like, if we could break 500, we're going to be good. You know what? That team was great. the corners who started in front of me got hurt and I balled out and then I got paid. And so, like, I could tell the story that way, or I could be like, hey, I got traded to Atlanta. I was really down in the dumps, which I was. But I just focused and I persevered and beat everybody out and dominated. But it's just that whole thing.
Yeah, like, what they, especially, like, the later parts of my career pointed out, this might be a movie. Yeah. I am not the star of it. Just so people understand, because my big luck break, I tell people all the time, like, anytime I keep something up on my website, I haven't updated it in quite a while. That was like a year by year, like pretty thorough look at all the stuff that happened or whatever it was. And I really didn't want to present it as, and still I rise. You know, like I did not want to do that. But the first thing I put in there is, this story only works because I could call my parents and ask for money and get it. And I don't mean like, yo, can you send me $20, $30 like you might ask for in college? I mean like, hey, I need $1,000 because I don't know exactly how this mortgage is going to get paid type situation, right? Like, that's the big, big one for me, is the luck of that, right? Because my dad always said, he said it when I was younger, and he was just like, yo, you got to remember something, man. What you were able to do, it didn't really have anything to do with you. Like, it wasn't like he was putting me in my place, but he's like, really, like, human capital type stuff, right? How smart I am or am not, that's a function of genetics, right? Like, I didn't have anything to do with that. Like, so many of these things that we discuss, you look at it and you realize, yo, man, I ain't actually the one that has anything to do with that. Like, a lot of that stuff just wound up being luck. And so, you know, I went out there, I did my work, and I made some things happen. But even then, let me tell you something. Doing television shows with the likes of like Dan Le Batard and Bob Costas lets you know you can be who you are. Like, I know how people feel about me and my work, right? I got really nothing to be defensive about. I got nothing to explain. I don't have a whole lot of people. Like, the people that really hate on my work, I mean, you can go look at who they are. They ain't necessarily the people that you need to be listening to. You know, like, people I respect me, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. But let me tell you something, dog. You can do a TV show with Dan Le Batard and be positioned as peer, and he can view you as peer, and we mm-hmm. are doing this together, but you are not that person, right? Like, folks gonna come up and they gonna see it. You're gonna have to be solid in what it is that you are, because if you expected everybody else to look at you the same, probably not going to happen. Like, I'm in this movie, but I know who the star is. It's the dude whose daddy that is next to me, and that's okay. You know, that ain't
Fox for Fridays. Oh, I forgot. We're talking to other people. It's not just us having a conversation between like you and me. Because, like, of course I understand that. I do. Get Up is the show that I'm on the most. Yeah, that's a Mike Greenberg vehicle.
Yes.
Your name is on this show. I get one podcast a Friday. So, like, I absolutely understand what it means, like, how it benefits you to be elevated by someone who is successful and viewed in a certain way. However it is that you viewed Dan when you first yeah. started doing HQ, like, that's how I see you in this business. So I recognize the pressure that comes with all of that, but that still doesn't mean that I'm not the protagonist, and you're the protagonist of your story, whether you want to believe it or not. I had this conversation with my 10-year-old, the oldest. She's a first child, and like all the stereotypes about the first child like hit her hard, where it's like, she's the kid where if you say, I'm disappointed, like, you're going to get the waterworks. Mm-hmm. And like, she really hurt by that. And she's like verbalized it before. Like, I just want to make you guys proud. And like, I don't care. Like, you make me proud when you like chill out. And like, she used to cry if she was like late to school or something. So she's done better with a lot of that stuff. But last night she forgot her book. She had homework. She's in fifth grade. And I just keep trying to reiterate to her, it's the fifth grade, you know? And I have the other fight with my son where it's like, I got to tell him, like, no, this is important. This is serious. But with her, I got to be like, it's not a big deal. So she's upset last night because she lost her book. She can't finish her homework without a book. Of course, it's not a big deal. The book's $8. We can get a digital copy. It's not a big deal. But she's still crushed because she's forced us to spend $8 on a book. And we're all kind of disappointed because school mm-hmm. just started. You should be able to handle this. So, like, I've been taking some writing classes over the summer, narrative writing stuff, and so it just hit me, she doesn't think she's the protagonist in this. She loves movies, loves comic books, and loves all that stuff. So that was my big parenting breakthrough last night, was, you know, all the movies that you like, and I went through the movies, this is how they are structured. At the end of act two in every movie, the protagonist is at their low point. Something has to go wrong for them to come be the hero afterwards. Like, you just got to remember that when this thing happens, this ain't nothing but the end of act two, baby. You know, like, you're going to be fine. This is just the end of act two. And honestly, this ain't that low. You're going to have some much worse ends of act twos in your life. And that's what scares me more than anything. I don't want you to be a lawyer or president. You can be an artist. You be whatever it is that fulfills you and makes you happy because you have that luxury, frankly. Like, you could call on your parents to give you money. As long as I don't do nothing stupid, she's always going to have that support. And to me, it would be a travesty if with that, she pursues some foolishness to make us proud and impress us. Like, she does that often where she's like, I want to be a journalist. And I'm like, why? Because mommy really likes Good Morning America and you're a journalist. Mm-hmm. I want to be a lawyer. Like, why? Mommy and Aunt Lauren and uncle, whatever, they're all lawyers. That's when I'd be like, what do you want to be? Who cares what anybody else thinks? That's the interesting thing, that you have different parenting challenges with different kids and figuring out how to parent different kids differently.
Yeah, and that feeling, that proud thing is interesting because she wants to make you proud, which then makes her feel proud. Because I always say, like, when you try to figure out what it is with kids, I just had this epiphany once, like watching a kid, you know, not even a toddler yet because they were trying to learn how to toddle, you know, but like that moment when you see one of them like stand up for the first time, and you see it on their faces, right? Like that level of pride. Because that's one thing I've learned about the infant range. They spend a lot of time thinking about what it is that they want to do and try to figure that stuff out, right? Like, hey, my kid will never figure out how to climb up there and get that thing. Incorrect. They spend all day over there cooking up some sort of plan, right? And taking notes. Like, you don't know how they doing it, but they soaking up what worked, what did not. All of that stuff, right? But, like, you got to find whatever the thing is that gives someone pride. And for a lot of people, it is like giving pride to others. And I didn't think about this until much later in life, but I don't think I ever questioned whether or not my parents were proud of me, but I never thought of it. And the one thing I did know was not going to bring that pride out was academic achievement at the elementary, middle, high school, and college levels. That just wasn't going to do it. And by the way, that would have been nothing to really be proud of because I didn't work especially hard at any of those points. And I got to the end of it, right? I don't even know if my parents look at it as I didn't work especially hard because I produced. There was nothing to be proud of for me graduating from high school, right? There was kind of something for me to be proud of in college, but not really. It didn't really land with me that my parents were proud of me until I flunked out of graduate school because they didn't trip. Right. As you got to understand, my parents would love one of their kids to get a PhD, right? Like, my sister got an MFA, which is, you know, a terminal degree, so it goes there. My brother, he's ABD, like all but dissertation, and he just decided he didn't want to do that anymore. They wanted to have another kid carry on the Jones professorial legacy. I don't think there's any question about that. And so, you know, it's the first time I'd hit a wall. And again, I'm looking around like, yo, I know
it was the last hope too.
Yeah, I was exactly. I was the last hope. And I'm looking around at my cohort in grad school. And I'm like, come on, man. I know I got this, right? But for whatever reason, I didn't. And I just remember when I called them, they were both on the phone at the same time. They were at the house together and they were both on the phone at the same time. And I just remember nobody was really tripping. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, I've done my thing. But the thing that I'd done that I didn't realize, their pride in me was honestly in being a good person, right? Yep. Like, it wasn't about this achieving and all this other stuff. Like, they were really happy with what they felt was the person that I had become. And see, for me, that was big because all this other stuff, man, we are all going to catch L's of varying levels. And what I didn't realize until I got older about a lot of people is that the L's they take, it's not even about, like, I'm sad that I took this L, or I'm disappointed that I will not be able to do what was going to be on the other side of this if the L had been a W. It's the idea that the L reinforces these things that they already negatively view about themselves. And that was the thing that I didn't get. And I'd be like, damn, man, that's rough right there. Because we all going, like, there's nobody out here that's not catching L's. It's a lot of people not acknowledging the L's that they've caught. But you're going to catch them. You go learn from them if you're lucky. You know, you go do something else. Like, I feel bad for your daughter with that thing with the book, because you're also in that position where you're like, yo, it's no big deal. It's just $8. But you can't be like, oh, come on, baby. We got all the money in the world. Nah, then next thing you know, they start burning stuff on fire just to do it.
That's the point I was making about raising these kids differently, is they need different things. She don't need me to remind her about that. Like, she's the kid who, when she wants, like, she really likes bubble tea. And when she wants bubble tea, she'll go clean her whole room and finish all her homework and then come to me with, like, look, I did this, this, and this, this. Can I get bubble tea? Whereas the 5-year-old is five, so that's whatever. And then my son is different. He don't like bubble tea necessarily, but he likes Roblox. And you got to get Robux to buy stuff in Roblox. He like, I want some Robux. So? me too. Me too. He's like, you got money to buy Robux? You buy coffee every day? Or like my parents used to tell me when I was a kid, like when we bought a house, it's like, this is our house. This is your house. I don't got to tell him that. Everything in his house, he believes is his. And it's like, it's a tough thing because it's so much less frustrating, I guess, or challenging for me to deal with my daughter. But I also recognize that the perspective that my son has is the perspective of a world leader or the leader of a coup. Like, that is a perspective that is, especially amongst men, is a perspective that is consistently rewarded and will lead you to success and lead you to like whatever it is that you want in life. So I don't want to dampen that in him, but at the same time, like, hey bro, you're gonna have to work for this. I take him every week. I take him and a couple of his friends out to like just boys. We go to the park and we either play like football or something, run around, tag or something like that since school started, like last 3 weeks I've been doing that. And I'll play with him sometimes, and then sometimes I'll just watch. Just watching the way that he interacts with his friends. At one point, like, trying to calm down and like be respectful to your friends, but at another point I'm like, yeah. We talked about before, like, that's that dog.
Yeah.
That's the no back, like, that's what you need, whether he's not going to be a professional athlete, because that's just like absurd, but at any walk in life, the guy who walks in a room and owns that room. And also, like, when the crazy thing is, like, when things don't go well, he's not discouraged. He's like, oh, yeah. He, like, forgets it. He's got that short-term memory, and it's different. Whereas my daughter will hang on to something that happened when she was six, and it'll be in the back of her mind, like, man, this is the second time I lost a book. And I'm like, what? I lost a book when I was six. I left it at the museum in New York. Whereas my son is like, whatever, we get a new book. I'll go find another book. I ain't even like that book that much anyway. And it's so frustrating as a parent to deal with that. But also, it's good to remind myself that, like, it has value.
Yo, the problem is, little man got the right idea. You just don't want him to get it too good. Right? Like, yeah, no, that's kind of what it needs to be. Like, yeah. I mean, because people carry that stuff into adulthood. And so, like, I, as a person who has probably grown to the point of, I ain't tripping on that. Like, when you deal with people who have not gotten to that point, it's rough because you got to go there with them, right? Yeah. Like you're like, yo, we could all be over here not tripping.
Yeah. What do you mean? I'm slightly confused. You're saying when you're somebody who takes things a little bit more seriously, or you take it less seriously?
I'm saying there has been an evolution of perspective, shall we say, right? So, like, doing something like that or making that kind of mistake, there was certainly a point in my life when I was younger where I might have really, like, been bothered about those things in that way, right? Like, I would probably say when I was younger, I probably was closer to where your daughter is. Not quite the same place, but probably closer to that.
Yeah.
And then you go a little farther and you realize, like, oh, yeah, well, okay, left that book.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what I'm not about to do is beat myself up about this all day long. Like, I don't win by doing this, and I know I don't deserve it. So, I ain't doing that. You know, like, I got to that point, though.
It's involuntary, though, for some people. Yeah. You have to work on getting to the point where you can do that. And the interesting thing is, like, I'm guilty of this. It's funny because it's a little bit of a meta situation where I'm trying to instill in my daughter the idea that, like, you find value from within, and you find worth in the things that you do from within. You don't have to look to us for some sort of validation or approval. But we all are products of this world. So it's interesting that I'm telling her that at the same time, that's just something I heard. You know, like, the idea of telling somebody to find their, like, their true calling or validation from within, like, all that stuff is built on the interaction of whatever you are internally or genetically or psychologically. The interaction of that with the society is how you end up becoming or developing some sort of value structure from within. So it's an interesting dynamic where, like, she's 10. She isn't who she's going to be. But at the same time, I'm like, you got to be confident in you. You got to find value from within. Chase whatever career it is that you want to chase. Part of the reason why I didn't want to be a professional football player, part of that was I turned on the TV and people who I could see myself, like black people, frankly, who were being celebrated, they was doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, we sit and watch games, and he was hype when he was watching these games. And, like, then by the time I was 8, 10, 12 years old, I was like, no, I want to be a football player. But realistically, I was born in the UK. Had I stayed there and been raised there, I don't know. I mean, it's not even like the soccer players were revered over there. I don't know what a little black boy like me growing up in the UK would have wanted to be. So it's a weird dynamic that I notice while I'm telling her that, I'm like, hey, you got to find your own meaning. I'm giving her this speech that is cinematic. At the same time, I'm like, this kind of don't mean shit. To a 10-year-old, find your own meaning, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah, but they got to, though. Like, that's the one thing about it. Like, yeah. That was the other part. When we were at the Soul House, the dude was like, so are you saying to focus on what other people think of you? I was like, no. Just understand that what other people think of you, they have votes. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying to try to win the election necessarily, depending on what the election is, but those people have votes. But how you feel, it's all going to be internal, because the people who don't feel good about themselves, and I'm not saying this judgmentally, but it's the truth, none of the stuff on the outside ever fixes the issue. You don't even have to think that you're dope. You just got to think that you're you, and this is what it is, and look at all these other screw-ups everywhere and be like, yo, at least I ain't them. That's if nothing else. I feel like you should be able to look around and be like, yo, that person's trucking around just fine. What am I bugging on? I want to ask you this before we get out of here, you know, so that we can at least act like we talked about a little sports. How was it taking a little homie to see Mahomes and Lamar and the Chiefs and the Ravens, and you got the Omar whistle for the Ravens came?
Oh, yeah. So it was great. I didn't recognize in the stadium. I didn't hear the whistle. I saw it afterwards. But Lamar Jackson's my son's favorite player, and that makes me so happy. You know, like in this world where there's so many other opportunities and possibilities, and I think it's mostly because, like, I grew up in Baltimore and I played for the Ravens. So, like, once he was old enough to know that and think it was cool, he became a Ravens fan. We're in DC, so we're not far from there. And so, again, this is, we talk about randomness and happenstance. They just happen to get Lamar, and he just happens to be great. And my little black boy has on a jersey that says Jackson 8 on the back. And it's not even, there's something particularly special about Lamar, not just his unique athleticism, it's his seemingly authentic personality. And I know that word is charged, but like we all, especially if you're in a public position, which quarterback of an NFL football team, there's nothing more public than that. Like generally people in those positions do a bit of code switching. If Lamar is code switching, I don't know what the other code is. Dude, I'm not sure I want to see it.
How hilarious would it be if like Lamar code switching is like when Stringer Bell get off the set. Now all of a sudden this dude talking like he just got off the boat from jolly old England.
That would be hilarious. But like that's just, so that is obviously part of it. And so I go to the game and we get there just in time to see the introductions, which for little kids is pretty fun and exciting. And he's just standing there. I'm not the guy who's normally on his phone. Like my wife takes all the pictures, but I saw it and they about to introduce Lamar. And he's standing there with his Jackson jersey name on the back, watching this very black in many ways man come out. And like, he's not the owner of the team. That's a whole different thing, but he is certainly the star there. And it was just a cool thing for him to come out in that situation, and then for the game to go the way it did, and my dad's there with me. It just was really cool and fun.
That's dope, man. I saw a little homie slept in the jersey and everything. Yeah. You know,
he wore it to school the next day, so he ain't take a shower. He fell asleep in a ride home. I put him in bed. He woke up the next morning. His mother was like, you taking a shower? He's like, nope.
Yo, nice. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes over there like, what Lamar Jackson ever do for Black Lives Matter, huh? I'll be out here like coming through for the cause. Point. Like, what okay. Okay. I'll be talking about your mama. Okay, but it's cool.
It's a fair point. Yo. He got a Mahomes jersey too that he rarely wears.
Yo, that's Brady Manning for the next decade, man. No matter what nobody say. I saw some fool wrote something, and I lie to you not about this. And get out of here right fast after this. He tried to make the argument that an agent had told him that the Ravens gonna pay Lamar Jackson what they pay Marlon Humphrey.
I saw that.
Like, what league is this? What, like, how do you think that's going to work?
Yeah, it's so absurd. I don't even know where to engage with it. So, like, I don't know how to engage with something so ridiculous. Like, that agent got to go.
Like, when you hear that, and obviously agents don't like players who don't have agents. But when you hear that, as a writer, you just have to be like, okay, but this is preposterous. And then keep it moving. Yeah. It is not, yo, I'm going to put this out here. Because Teddy Bridgewater got more money than that.
I don't, yeah. Again, like it's so absurd. Like I've seen people say on the internet that like going after these people who say ridiculous things, like it's fair to go after somebody who says something that's reasonable. You take it apart so other people can see that it doesn't make any sense. But like this, I don't like it's
Huh?
I don't know. If that actually happens, then the Ravens should feel terrible for taking advantage of someone. Yes. Like, that's all that could be defined as.
It's actually Andrew Brandt wrote something interesting about that. And he was like, yo, one thing you do need to understand, though, is that just because he doesn't have an agent doesn't mean the Ravens can just take him to the cleaners. Because if they do at some point, he's going to realize it. And it's going to be a problem that has to be fixed.
Yeah, I'm not here to glorify any organization. Like, all capitalist business have their drawbacks. But having been inside there, that's not the way they operate, really. Like, yeah. And Ozzie's gone, but Costa was under Ozzie, and that's generally not the way they operate. The players aren't always happy, but they try to do right by him.
Ray Lewis going to show up and do that full of my... The way y'all are treating that boy is unfair. You making me look bad. How's this got to do with you? Because this is my team, Ray. It's my team.
It sure feels like it.
It is.
He came out there
though.
And did that dance. He did that dance, man. They got Ogden before him, but they were the first two draft picks in Baltimore, which is absurd. I can go on a rant about how Ozzie, they need to re-induct Ozzie into the Hall of Fame as not just a tight end, but as a GM. Yeah. How your first two draft picks go to Hall of Fame?
Right, and we're not sure which one was better. Your second best draft pick in your first draft there might have been Ray Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah. Best linebacker ever.
It might have been their second best draft pick because Ogden was a monster.
That's crazy.
Man, we just had a good one. That is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out, theundefeated.com. Check him out on Get Up. You are the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday morning killer now.
I don't know about all that. Yes, I do. I am. You're right.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassain and Dave Presley handing everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.